that.
Not those Lions. Three Lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
Let's move on, because we're going back to the situation with regards to the England football team. And I'm delighted to say that Martin Lipton is with us this morning. Martin, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm okay, actually, yes.
I'm going to go to Tokyo tomorrow, so I've got another run to Heathrow to get another COVID test this morning, but that's the nature of international travel these days.
Right. So no time to sit and dwell and lick the spiritual wounds? Or are you actually thinking, you know, semi-final in the World Cup, finalists here, the progression is good, we're getting there, this is a time to be positive? Is your glass half full, I guess I'm asking?
It is, but it was. I said after Moscow that it was the beginning and not the end for that England team. Now we've reached the middle, not the end. And I genuinely believe that. I thought Italy would win the game because they're better. They proved to be better. It was the correct result, no question of that, even though it ended up going down to a couple of kicks from 12 yards. But the improvement in England is going to continue. There's no doubt about that. I reflect back to Germany. Semi-final, final, semi-final, semi-final before they won. Sometimes you need to learn to lose before you learn to win. England are in that cycle now. The fact is, it's two successive, if you include the Nations League, three successive semi-finals. That's never happened before.
So what needs to happen to accelerate the process to turn them from a team who can take on an Italy or a Spain in a final and go, actually, we are better than you and we deserve to win?
But you don't need to be better than them to deserve to win. You can just sometimes win. But what they do need is the ability to react slightly more under pressure. The one thing that it was better for me was the second half was, for the first 25 minutes, eerily reminiscent of the Croatia semi-final. The difference was that in that Croatia semi-final, once Croatia scored the equaliser, there was never any doubt over who was going to win. Croatia were going to win the match. You can't say that on Sunday, because Southgate, albeit maybe somewhat belatedly, did make changes and did restore balance, parity, maybe even England, you could argue, shaded the last 35 minutes or so, which is an improvement. But they were forced back by the sheer relentlessness of the Italian midfield and attack, and they couldn't find a way out. They need to be able to change the game so that they have breathing, they create the breathing space. In the first half, England were unquestionably the better team. Over the 120 minutes, in my book, Italy were unquestionably the better team. But the gap between England and Italy is far narrower than the gap between England and Croatia 3 years ago, and Italy are a better team than Croatia.
So is it a personnel issue? Is it a tactical approach? Is it a flexibility? Is it change on the side? And what is that bit that's...
Everything, and including maturity of the team and the manager. Look, there'll be changes in that team by the time England, if they qualify, and I think they will, get to Qatar. I think Bellingham will become a focal point of the team, which changes the dynamic of the team, because not only can he be a defensive midfielder, but he can also join and he can pass. He can move the ball, progress it with his feet rather than with his legs, as it were. The link really wasn't there. A lot of England stuff was having to run with the ball, which is good in itself on occasions, but also you need to be able to pass it a bit better. And that was the issue, that they couldn't pass their way out of trouble other than just banging it long, which of course invited the pressure back. But also the likes of Foden, who would have probably come on as a substitute had he been fit to play earlier. Probably Foden would have come on when Sacco did, I suspect, in the game if he were available. The likes of Sancho and many of these other boys are going to get better and better just through the natural maturity, evolution, ageing process. Even in your early 20s, you're not the player you are in your mid and late 20s. We know that. Particularly if your game isn't solely based on pace. These players are technical football players. They're not just about how quick they can run.
Is Gareth Southgate too conservative?
Well, he looked at the model that won Portugal and France the last two tournaments and decided to replicate that. And it took him to the final. People weren't saying that Didier Deschamps was too conservative when he lost to a Portugal team without Ronaldo in the final of 2016. He just stuck to his guns and won the World Cup. Sometimes, you know, as I've said before, the same answer did gain a power must it maintain. You can tweak But why would you throw everything out of, you know, the baby out with the bathwater? Sometimes it's not that bad. And they've got to, as I said, semi-final and final with a team that's still finding its feet at international level.
I think that's true. And I think that there's a danger, maybe not a danger, but one of the worries you might have is that the outside noise does ratchet up a little bit, and that something, that an overreaction happens. And I see there's talk about Gareth Southgate and where his contract is in terms of after Qatar. But he clearly is still the right man for the job. And I think that obviously things will be renewed next year and there'll be a greater discussion after that World Cup. But I would like to think that everybody within the FA sees the direction in which this team is going, Martin. There's no danger that something weird happens over the next little while, is there?
No, not a chance. They're fully bought into Southgate and what he brings. And they want, whatever happens, Southgate will be wanted to help guide the future. Whether it be, you know, when it comes to his successor, they will take counsel from Gareth Southgate. They recognise that Gareth and Trevor Brooking are two of the prime architects of this England team. Not so much the players who they select now, it's the fact that the culture that they brought in at ground level, at grassroots level, small-sided games, playing through the thirds, playing in a different way, not going back to the old English boot it and let's see what happened and hurrah and patriotism and we're stronger. No, you win by being smarter. That's how you play. And if you look across the whole of, I'm sure it's elsewhere in Europe as well, but particularly in England, you go on any football pitch on a Saturday, Sunday morning and watch the kids. They're all more skillful at six than kids were at 16, 20 years ago. They're taught to love the ball. Now, if all of the players are doing that, from kid, the lowest 3, 4, 5 year olds upwards, of course, by the time they get to 18, 20, 25, it's more than second nature. It's utterly instinctive. It's what they do. So you are putting the building block for success from the early age. And clearly, you know, the results of the last few years and the number of English players playing for the bigger English teams, that's a really good sign. Look at the Champions League final, how many English players. That, even 10 years ago, look at the United-Chelsea final in 2008. You know, there were far fewer percentile English players than there were in Chelsea v Man City.
It's all a bit mad when you think that Sam Allardyce could still be the England manager if, you know, he hadn't had the pint of wine.
But we'll never know, will we? I mean, look, they would have gone to Russia potentially, got sploshed by Algeria and
maybe
and everybody else and gone out in the group stage and have been sacked. Who knows? I mean, it's ifs and ands, isn't it? You can't imagine what didn't happen. Well, you can, but there's no point in that.
I guess I'm saying that they were lucky that Southgate, and obviously they had positioned Southgate there for at some point in the future. He was the, in case of emergency, break glass option. But they were lucky, I guess, that he got the gig when he did get the gig and he was the right man at that point.
Yeah, he was. It needed a step change. He brought it. And, you know, we'll never know what an Allardyce reign would have brought. He's far more scientific than people believe. However, I don't think he'd have been quite as unifying a force within the squad as Southgate has unquestionably proven to be. And I also think he'd have been more naturally conservative in terms of the players he selected, not necessarily the playing style, but the personnel.
Yeah, it is interesting to consider what that team might have looked like and who wouldn't be in the team, who might be in the team. In terms of the selection issues and the penalties, all that kind of stuff comes under a very severe microscope in the aftermath of a defeat. Is any of it important? Are there significant lessons for Southgate to learn and think, actually, I should have done something differently? Maybe somebody else should have been taking the fifth penalty? Or is that all hindsight journalism and largely the type of thing that, as a manager, you build for the next time, but they're just mistakes? Some team is going to lose
the
penalty.
The Americans have a brilliant phrase for it, don't they? The Monday morning quarterback. Anyone could be wise after the event. I'll just put a few names to you. Franco Baresi, Zinedine Zidane, Roberto Baggio, Michel Platini. What have they got in common?
Well,
missed penalties in shootouts. There you go. Statistically, historically, the suggestion is actually the younger the player, the less likely it is for them to miss because they're not burdened by the weight of history when they step up. But sometimes it doesn't work out right. Jordan Pickford, you know, Jorginho, who is probably the best penalty taker in the Premier League, missed the penalty to win the tournament, to win it. If Sacco scores, Italy is crucifying Jorginho for missing the penalty. because that's what happens in football. I mean, the best thing for England, I guess, is it was three players who missed. There isn't one scapegoat. You can't blame three. You know, it's not worth it. Well, some idiots will, because they're idiots, not because they understand football. Sometimes you just miss. But I would say that if these three boys who missed are all incredibly strong characters, even at their very tender ages. And the proof of that is what they do off the pitch. Rashford being able to take on and bring the government to heel twice. Sancho going away at 17, telling City, no, you don't play me, I'm going to leave, and going and ending up becoming an £80 million player 3 years later, whilst investing a huge amount of money in his local community in South London. And Saka, the boy from Greenford, straight A student, bright as a button, perfect exemplar of what English society should be, a meritocratic society, from West London, making it in North London, being an England international at 19. That's what you want. And I, you know, these are big, strong boys. They're young. They'll be back.
We've been talking about it all morning, because obviously the bid for the 2030 World Cup is supposed to be a joint bid with the Irish FA and the other FAs. There's definitely questions being asked on this side of the water about what's going to happen in the aftermath of what happened at Wembley. Is there a long-term damage to any potential bids by the fact that ticketless fans were able to access the European Championship finals?
Well, if there is, then the South American bid must be destroyed because of the damage caused before the Copa Libertadores final the other year. Money talks, finances talk. The issue is, does a British Isles bid get the support of Seferin and UEFA over the Spanish-Portuguese bid? If not, it doesn't matter anyhow. If so, then they've got a chance. Unless they decide to ignore UEFA and plead to Infantino and get his support because the South American bid doesn't win. And also, if China bid, China win anyhow, so it won't matter.
So you don't think this has any political ramifications?
I don't think it helps. I think the images of Sunday afternoon and Sunday morning, in fact, that's been the whole night, were despicable, disgusting, outrageous, a slur, a genuine badge of shame for the country. And I mean that. What I witnessed on television was utterly beyond belief. It was so bad. I speaking to people who were there and listening to them, it was probably even worse if you were in it. It was disgusting, and it's a shame. It was shameful, but unfortunately, we're not the only country which has shameful acts perpetrated by some small number of individuals. The worry, I guess, is that there were too many of them. The policing was woefully, and the stewarding, and the ticketing, and the organisation was also woefully inadequate. That is not in any way meant to justify or condone, because I would like every single one of those people to be banned from anywhere near a football stadium for the rest of their lives. I really would. Unfortunately, I don't have that power.
Do you think that will happen? Because the outrage is... Look.
Well, there's CCTV. They should be able to identify them.
Yeah, a lot of CCTV.
And they'll know if they had a ticket or not, because they have a database of ticket holders. So anyone they can identify who went into that stadium clearly didn't have a ticket, or who they know clearly didn't have a ticket, they should be able to try and identify, and then the court should come in and ban them. Now, legally, I think they're only allowed to ban for 3 years, but I think you can always rush through emergency legislation.
How important is the 2030 bid, Martin, and how much of an effort will there be over the next little while to, as you say, I guess, ratchet up the necessary political things you got to do in order to make this thing happen?
Well, there's lots of elements to it. First, you've got to give FIFA everything they want and more. And there needs to be political will for that. My understanding, actually, from talking to people within the FA, is there's far greater motivation and desire to bid for the tournament from the UK government than there necessarily is from the FA. They'll go along with it and they won't be opposed, but they're not going to bid unless they think they can win. And they've got political intelligence out there trying to ascertain the reality. I said, if China are allowed to bid, there's no point, because Infantino wants to give it to China. And Infantino, while he doesn't have the support of UEFA or probably CONMEBOL, he has everybody else in his pocket. And he only needs 105 votes to win, less than that if the UK bid, because none of the five nations can actually then vote under the rules. So there are those aspects too. I think everyone within English football would love to see British football, actually, UK, British Isles football has expanded into Ireland, because it would be great to have games at the Aviva and at Croke Park. It would be great to have clubs train, teams training in Northern Ireland. It'd be great to have games at Handham and Hampden and Murrayfield and Ibrox. It'd be great to have games at Cardiff, and fantastic to have games the length and breadth of England. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah, the fact that we're all going to be watching games in winter in Qatar suggests there's a lot more to it than that. And
it's a different system, then. To be fair, we can't. Whilst I'm not exactly always the greatest fan of Infantino, a vote of the entire Congress is different to a vote of 22 people in a room, because if you're going to be really cynical, it costs more to buy off 100 people than it does to buy off 11.
I can see the maths already being done in certain regimes around the world. We've still got a lot of money.
But I'm not sure that anyone's got the money anymore, actually.
Maybe some people do. You're heading to the Olympics, obviously.
Yes.
And covering everything, or is it...
Gold. I mean, I am all things to all men. I'm going to prove my ability to cover every sport really badly.
Right.
To be fair, I'm very good at covering one sport really badly, so I'm now going to expand what Ken Bates once described as my sphere of incompetence.
What's the setup going to be, Martin? Are you going to get to any events? Is it like shuttles and a very biosecure bus to venues?
It's very amazing. I go Wednesday night. I then have to do 4 nights in hotel quarantine, which is strict hotel quarantine. For the first 10 days after that, I'm not allowed outside of the Olympic corridor. I have to go in shuttles. If they're not there, they have to put on private taxis for me, which are Olympic-only taxis. I'm not allowed into restaurants. I'm only allowed into convenience stores if I'm in and out in 30-odd seconds and don't look at the noodles before I eat them, whatever it might be. After 14 nights, I'm treated as a local, so I'm allowed into restaurants, just they're all shutting at 7 o'clock, so I won't be able to get in them because I'll still be working. So it's going to be a rather restricted and somewhat sterile experience, but I can get to the venues, and there will be, allegedly at least, mixed zones to talk to the athletes. So I think the numbers will be heavily restricted, and mainly TV crews with a handful of written press journalists like myself who'll have to pull the quotes, which is absolutely reasonable and understandable. And then there'll be the formal press conferences afterwards. But a lot will be done on Zoom. It will have to be, not ideal. And I think it will be a very sterile environment for the athletes. But at the same time, for many of them, this is their one chance of taking part in an Olympics, or one chance of an Olympic medal. I understand the worries and fears of the Japanese people. I feel for them hugely. But I also feel that the athletes deserve their day in the sun.
Martin, good stuff. Enjoy it. Thanks a million for joining us over the course of the Euros as well. Cheers.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.
It's Martin Lippin giving us some thoughts on the fallout from England's defeat on penalties.